Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us today for our webinar this afternoon titled Digital Color Printing, the Wave of the Future for the Packaging Industry. And we'd like to thank Xerox for sponsoring this webinar. Today, I am joined by Simon Healy, and Simon is the CEO of MediaWare over in Europe, and we're going to be spending some time with you talking about all of the opportunities available as you look at the world of digital packaging. Before we get started, what I do want to do is give you some tips for enjoying the webinar. First of all, if you are having any technical difficulties, please let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the help widget below. If you have any questions today, we will be taking them throughout the webinar, and all you have to do is submit them via the Q&A box. Please make sure you disable pop-up blockers, and you can see what this console can do by clicking on the Tips for Attendee widget, and you get a complete rundown of what all the widgets are capable of doing. In terms of our agenda today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be spending some time, first of all, discussing digital packaging and the market opportunity. And I'm going to share with you some current research that InfoTrends did on digital packaging and how it's meeting the needs of brand owners. Then you're going to hear from what I categorize as one of the best practitioners out there, Simon Healy. And Simon's going to share with you how they've made digital packaging work effectively at MediaWare. We'll wrap up with some recommendations and conclusions. And again, please feel free to ask questions throughout the webinar. I'll be monitoring the Q&A tab, and we'll also take those questions at the end of the webinar. Now, to get started, I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about the importance of packaging. And when we think about packaging today, we're finding that companies have become very clever in how they spend their advertising budget and how they're using new media, such as viral campaigns. However, no fast-moving consumer goods company can avoid the fact that the greatest advertising for the product is the packaging that the consumer sees on the shelf when they actually make their purchase. No matter how vast an advertising budget is available, those brands that succeed are those that recognize the importance of packaging for brand recognition and marketing, and that consumer shelf impact as the point of contact for the brand relationship. I think we have to look at packaging very differently in today's market. It's always been a protective container for whatever is inside of it. It's also a dispensing mechanism. But what we're seeing is it being used for a whole lot more. It's a tracking and a tracing tool. It's a security agent. It can be used to educate and inform. By the way, it's an integral part of interactive marketing campaigns. And for those in the printing, especially in the digital side of the market, it's a major growth opportunity for the printing industry. I think there's a couple key things that we need to make sure we understand about the packaging market. First of all, it's a huge and very, very diverse market. Secondly, and most important, it's an opportunity that grows with the human population. It grows with economic development. One of the most important things if you're in the printing industry is it's probably not going to be replaced by an electronic document. Small format and emphasis on brand image make full digital color a good option for short runs. Digital color is starting to become a key print method. And by the way, packaging is also becoming a pivotal driver of multi-channel communication. As we take a look at the packaging market, it continues to be the biggest single analog-to-digital print market growth opportunity. InfoTrends projects the digital packaging market opportunity around the globe will grow at a 13.5% compound annual growth rate across all technologies. That includes electrophotographic, mid-range inkjet, and high-speed inkjet. And every section of the world will see growth in terms of use of technology as you look at different regions of the world. And while labels comprise the largest market share for digital packaging applications, we're going to see growth in flexible packaging and folding cartons. The key message is that packaging is a big and a double-digit growth opportunity regardless of sector. Now, one of the big things that we see is that there's a wide range of REM lengths. And the sweet spot for digital packaging, and Simon will talk more about this, is between 1,000 and 5,000. And it depends on the size, number of units, or number of cartons, labels, et cetera. But what we're finding is that when you combine fast turnaround and the requirements for variable data, we're seeing that there's a lot more opportunity in the digital packaging side. We're also seeing that brand owners are driving to shorter and shorter runs, and we expect digital to move to longer runs predicated on speed, workflow, and lower operating costs. We're seeing those end customer requirements drive shorter runs and migration from traditional technology. We're also seeing things like high-speed continuous inkjet that will have a major impact on the overall market. What we're really seeing is that digital packaging value proposition is uniquely designed to meet the needs of the brand owner, as well as, by the way, help the overall supply chain operation. And what you're seeing, and Simon will talk a lot about this, is that there's two critical constituencies. There's the person that's responsible for the supply chain and the brand owner. And you need to really take the time to understand their issues. You need to build a business proposition, and you need to ensure that you understand that it differs by company and by industry. Now, there are some significant forces at play that are critical drivers in the migration to digital and substantial benefits to the brand owner. For the next few minutes, I'm going to spend some time sharing insights from a study InfoTrends recently completed of more than 150 brand owners. It's going to provide good insight on perspectives linked to the importance of a good logistics partner, as well as organizations that can help increase consumer engagement at the point of purchase. I think when you take a look at the requirements of the brand owner, what you're going to find out is increased focus by U.S. companies on manufacturing and packaging costs and reductions and productivity. There's a need for sustainability and biodegradability. There's increased flexibility needed to handle a widening range of packaging requirements. It includes shorter runs, a widening of ranges of packaging styles, sizes, and configurations to support increased SKUs. There's growing importance of packaging with respect to both product security and tracking. As ad budgets are cut, packaging solutions are being asked to do more with less. And packaging will become an increasingly competitive differentiator. There's a greater demand stemming from the upward growth of convenience in packaging. And what we're finding is that packaging is an active and intelligent portion of the multi-channel communication side of the market. Brand owners are very focused on identifying end-to-end value chains and packaging strategies that can reduce their overall carbon footprint as well as improve their bottom line. When InfoTrends talked to a number of brand owners, we asked participants how important sustainability was to their decisions to purchase packaging and label. 28.4% of the respondents said that it was highly important, and another 30.3% said that it was very important. It was deemed most important by companies that had revenues that topped $1 billion. And that's an important component for everybody to remember. In a massive drive to reduce overproduction, from the point of view of cost as well as the desire to reduce environmental impact, the forces are coming into position to make digital print for packaging highly viable. Those brand owners really favor green and sustainability, and they want a partner that can make these efforts coincide with cost reduction. And that means reduced waste and obsolescence. What we're also seeing is this concept, and we've heard it a lot in the past, about the long-tail effect for packaging, similar to what the book industry experienced. The same bell curve will apply to digital print for test marketing in the launch phase, which gives way to conventional print production as volumes increase, and back to digital for the long-tail effect. If you think about this long-tail effect, and I think many of us, as I said, have heard it used in the book market, it says that our culture and our economy is increasingly shifting away from a focus on a relatively small number of hits. And at the head of the demand curve, and toward a huge number of niches in the tail. When you think about that, that's what we're experiencing in a lot of the packaging side of the business. And what you're seeing is that digital technology has the potential of transforming the costs of production and distribution for a number of consumer items. As more products become available online, there's now less need to lump products and consumers into that one-size-fits-all container. In an era without the constraints of physical shelf space and other bottlenecks for distribution, what you're seeing is those brand owners want the ability to narrowly target goods and services that can be economically attractive. That links to need for shorter and shorter runs in terms of packaging. We're seeing the traditional retail economics dictate that stores only stock the likely hits because shelf space is expensive. We're seeing online retailers that can stock virtually everything and a number of available niche products that will outnumber the hits by several orders of magnitude. And those hits are the niches in the long tail, and they've been largely neglected until recently. And what we're seeing is this is favoring what we've looked at in terms of some of the migration to online products. Last May, Procter & Gamble, one of the largest consumer goods corporations in North America, opened its online direct store for customers in the U.S. It was dubbed the e-store, and by the way, this is an image of the store as it exists today. The e-store features the breadth of P&G brands, including Tide, Head & Shoulder, Pampers, Swiffer, Gillette, and Febreze. They launched the e-store with a single flat rate for standard shipping. $5, regardless of the quantity or size of product. Now, P&G is also going to make available a mobile phone application soon that will help shoppers purchase their favorite products at the e-store with photos from their mobile phones. When asked about online marketing, this is becoming a much more pervasive trend. And what we're seeing is big and small brands start to follow the leader. When we ask these brand owners about online marketing, 40.6% of brand owners said that they were marketing consumer products online, with another 16% saying that their companies would do so in the next 12 months. And what they're going to be doing is differentiating packaging and maybe even the products they provide to appeal to more niche audiences. 39.7% of the brand owners said that with online sales, they're going to differentiate with packaging, and 20.6% plan on doing so within the next 12 months. They're going to be adding links to Facebook and Twitter addresses and direct links to QR codes to drive the consumer to a direct relationship with them. And the objective is simple, profit margins. Once the supplier has created a direct relationship with the consumer, they can bypass the middleman, the retailer. The desire is to automate the relationship and automate the ordering process right from the package itself with a text or a mobile barcode. The content contained in that barcode can, in fact, actually be variable. So that let's assume the consumer who's ordered his product online runs low on laundry detergent, cereal, or ketchup. They can scan the barcodes and reorder items right from home and have the products shipped direct to their address without having to key in their name and address. I tell everybody I would much rather walk through my kitchen with my cell phone and order products than drive to the grocery store and walk down the aisles and wait in the checkout line. Another major focus that we're seeing for this research is the concept of versioning. The explosion of SKUs is well known by all brand owners, not only in the U.S., but in most developed countries. It's occurred as brand owners have sought to target markets defined by the way, ethnic group, gender, age, geography. And adding a country to a brand's marketing plan can require not only a language change to many labels or boxes, but a redesign for cultural reasons. Meanwhile, a sports championship or a new movie can be an opportunity to market a brand to fans for a specific professional team using dedicated packaging and labels. There are a number of great examples. You know, I can build my own Heineken brand. Hobby Lobby went, it grew candle sales by 3% with digitally printed seasonal introductions. L'Oreal introduced a new line of kids shampoos using Toy Story 3 with digital printing shrink wrapped sleeves. All of these were short-run versions, made a lot of sense. And so what we're seeing is a huge growth in versioning. And we're seeing versioning grow for a number of different categories. And in fact, brand owners expect on average expect 26 to 33.1% growth over the next 2 years at their companies. Brand owners in our survey also say they expect to see strong growth in versioning by application. That includes labels, folding cartons, and a number of different application sets. And what you'll see is Simon talks to you, he'll share with you what's happened on versioning with Microsoft and what he's done at MediaWare. We're also seeing the concept of serialized coding becoming very, very important both on packaging and labels. We're seeing information requirements increase across a number of industries. The most notable happens to be pharmaceutical packaging, where there are continued requirements to increase information occupying already limited label space. We've got impending legislation for tracking and tracing codes that looms, which means more printing to come. And technology providers are addressing this with tailored solutions based on packaging substrates and serialization. When it comes to tracking and tracing and the requirements for variable data, the answer is clear, and the requirements are becoming much, much more stringent. The last thing that we're seeing in this market space is that packaging has clearly become part of the interactive marketing mix. In a tough economy, marketers and brand owners are really expecting that package to do much more. Whether it's a label or a folding carton, the packaging has become part of the interactive marketing experience. By the way, from a game console to a coupon generator. Procter & Gamble used its Pringles container in Asia to partake in a two-way interactive three-dimensional game with a webcam. They used what's called augmented reality. And what they did is they actually placed augmented reality codes on their World Cup soccer Pringles in China. And it was targeted at young people age 18 to 24. And what happened is I could point my webcam on my cell phone or my PC at the Pringles container, and I could, in fact, actually transform that into a game console. We're seeing this done, by the way, with big brands and small brands. One of my other favorite examples is a solution from a company called Culinary Twist, and they actually make gourmet sauces. And what I can do is that their packaging contains a quick response code. And what I have the ability to do is I can scan that QR code, and it actually links me to recipes that I can create with their sauces. According to the owner, Lynn Milos, what she said is the next major thing she's going to be doing is integrating the ability to scan that code, and the consumer is going to be able to call up a coupon and redeem it at the checkout minutes later. We also saw Coca-Cola, another big brand, build out their Twist Text and Save program. One of the examples was done in Canada with Rogers Wireless. And what they did is they could actually twist off the cap, text in the number under the cap label, and then what they had the ability to do is participate in the sweepstakes. I used that unique pin under the bottle cap to act as proof of purchase. And then what happened is I could participate in everything from 75 cents off my mobile bill to $1,000 in iCoke rewards points. The message was that label performed a very valuable function. So the message inside is that the brand owners get the requirements. Requirements are driving shorter and shorter run lengths, ranging from versioning to interactive packaging to containing personalized information predicated on the movement to online. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to turn it over to Simon Healy, and Simon's going to share with you how they've actually made that work at MediaWare. Simon, take it away.
Okay. Thanks, Barb. So when we're looking with MediaWare, what I wanted to do today is take you through our engagement process with our brand owners and tell you a little bit about our business and how it all works. So we're around since 2009. We formed our company as a result of an opportunity to tender for Microsoft's low-volume, short-run packaging requirement for Europe, Asia, Middle East, and Africa. We saw this as an opportunity and took a tender approach because we recognized that there was technology in the marketplace in terms of hardware through the Xerox solution. And what we did was we, to engage with Microsoft, we needed to think differently. So we engaged in producing a clever piece of workflow that worked before any orders were put to the machine and automated the complete workflow, and I'll get into that a little later on. So maybe if we just stand back and have a look at the market from a global perspective, this is the $60 billion market and with very, very few digital packaging players in it. However, you know, we've got to look at the solution from a supply chain perspective. We also have to look at it from a marketing perspective. So I'm going to look at it from both those perspectives with you today. I suppose ultimately the problem is we have a lot of waste, and there's a lot of hard work wasted every year to the tune of 20% of the $60 billion market is lost through obsolescence. So that's a big number of $12 billion, and it's that problem is not going away. So I think innovation around supply chain, you know, and getting to just-in-time type delivery schedules is what's required to help eliminate that problem. But also there's different processes and different ways of manufacturing will also ensure that that problem is eliminated over time, or certainly lessened over time. So obsolescence continues to be a big problem, costing billions of dollars to the bottom line. We also look at the market and how it's supplied today, and there's a huge amount of inflexibility because the same processes have been used for the last couple of hundred years, and it's what people are comfortable with. However, that inflexibility has significant issues in a fast-moving, fast-changing marketplace where, you know, it's not acceptable for brand owners to have to wait for long lead in time because there's problems with the length of time it takes to get packaging to market. We also see many more retailers in particular and brand owners wanting to, you know, develop the capability of unpack activity. In other words, to very quickly move market demands to ensure that, you know, they can accelerate differentiation through unpack activity. And this is very, very much minimalized at the moment due to the processes that are currently in use and the high minimum order quantities that are required. And as Barb said, you know, the way we view the world as well is that globalization was a big thing 10 years ago, and, you know, the globe was coming smaller and the world marketplace was coming smaller. Now we see it moving to regionalization, you know, and the next 10 years will be all around personalization. So really, you know, when consumers are buying goods, particularly from the internet, particularly online, you know, if you're going to buy an iPhone now, you'll want your iPhone personalized or an iPad personalized. There's no reason why you can't have the box personalized also. So again, we also see that becoming, you know, in vogue over a period of time, that personalization, we're quickly moving towards it. So as that happens, we've certainly invested heavily in an automated digital packaging system, our plant. We currently, even though we started off in the software space of Microsoft, we currently have customers in the pharmaceutical business, in the consumer goods business, in the mobile phone accessory business. So, I mean, the application is definitely spread more than just one particular market segment. Some markets are quicker to adapt to the technology. Others are definitely slower. So one of our key, I suppose, differentiators from our perspective is that we look at obsolescence and we take it very seriously. We work with our clients and have developed business cloud-based business intelligence tools to identify what SKUs should migrate to digital printing. And that may be they should migrate because the order cycles suit, you know, ordering it when they want in on-demand capacity. It may well be that there's high levels of obsolescence. One thing I'd like to say very early on is that digital printed packaging will never replace the supply chain of lithographic packaging for the very first reason that it's complementary business. We don't see one as replacing the other whatsoever. We, you know, in fact, what we would say is probably 10 to 15% of it should be run through the digital space purely because of the profile of product that we see. We understand that that will be the case. When we look at the inflexibility, we see our system as being very flexible. We produce those 5 units. We can turn around product very, very quickly. If we have artwork approved on a Monday, the product can be with the brand owner by Thursday. And really, that's you know, we can do it in 24 hours. Our typical profile is 48 hours. We can turn product around. We have the capability to produce the short run packaging, and I'll show you some of the some elements of that later on in the presentation when we talk about marketing. But we definitely are giving our brand owners huge amount of capability when it comes to making their pack different at the point of purchase, and that's where we see a significant shift in marketing spend in years to come as well. So when it comes to digital, and why would you choose digital? Well, you know, the way we look at the traditional way of printing, it's cumbersome in terms of many steps. There's a lot of toing and froing in relation to artwork, in relation to proofing, in relation to setup and you know, making the plates, a lot of people involved in trusts, et cetera. It does take time, you know, and quite often a barrier to market or a barrier to competitive differentiation will be the ability to get product to market is hindered by the time it takes to get the pack printed and produced. And when you think of it logically, you know, everybody's looking for their market share, their piece of market share. The battles are being fought on a weekly basis, yet it takes 6 weeks to produce the pack. So there's a 6 weeks delay, or else it's becoming far more expensive to react because you have to get packaging printed in a hurry, and that leads to added expenses and so forth. So when we look at it, hey, listen, there doesn't have to be one simple step. So by automating the workflow that sits before it even goes to the printing press, what we've come up with is a work solution or a workflow that by the time the brand owner presses go to press to place an order, nobody touches that order before the box gets printed the other side of the Xerox automated packaging line. So it's one simple step whereby we're matching true artwork, we're matching our a code with a quantity, with a piece of artwork, and straight to print. And generally speaking, that can happen in 1 hour, and the majority of our profile, we turn products, as said, in around 48 hours from order right through. And again, it's not a labor-intensive system, and it's meant to complement the lithographic offset business. So in terms of our actual case itself and what it looks like in our factory floor, we use an iGen 4, a Xerox iGen 4, that's, you know, when the product is pushed through to an Epic coater that has both UV and aqueous finishing into a buffer stacker line that allows for batching and ganging and so forth. And when that's done, it's into a CAM, a die cutter, and then all that takes place in about 40, 45 seconds, and then we glue just offline, so just beside the machine itself. So it's a very simple piece of kit. It's a very easily operated piece of kit, and I think what you'll find in years to come is that you don't necessarily have to be a printer to actually operate this type of machinery because, you know, you can buy in the expertise. And certainly the workflows and the way this business is conducted now, it's an easy business and an easy point. It gives people an easy point of entry to get into this particular element of business. So when it comes to, you know, the holy grail is, well, at what point do we move from economical to move to digital? Because digital packaging, you know, has a reputation for or digital printing. But when it did have a reputation being expensive in the past, digital packaging now has maybe a bit of a reputation of being expensive. But when you actually look in detail, and this is a study we just taken from a U.S. Company, we just done a study with them recently on a contract that they were getting, and part of that contract would have meant some of the product going digitally, was that when we looked at it, the cutoff point was about 3,500 sheets through the iGen before, you know, the lithographic process had even warmed up. So at 3,500 sheets, and that, again, depends on how many you can get out of a sheet in terms of boxes. That could be anything from, you know, 1 out of a sheet to 10 out of a sheet. It made sense to run, from an economical perspective, to run it through the digital press because, really, you know, cost set up and run-ups and all the rest was coming in around $820 for a lithographic press, and really, you know, we had that printed at no extra cost through the digital process. So, you know, that's just an indication from a recent study, you know, that somewhere around 3,500 sheets makes it possible to run it traditionally, and that's where we would pitch our differentiating factor in one print process over another.
Hey, Simon, I have a question for you, and I'll let you describe this. The question that came in is the iGen 4 a roll stock press? And I'm going to let you respond to how you're using it.
The question is it roll stock? No, it's sheet-fed press.
Is it roll fed or sheet-fed? Yes.
Sheet-fed press.
Yeah. Okay, so just so everybody understands, it is a sheet-fed press. Okay.
Okay, so when we looked at Microsoft, and Microsoft is really indicative of many, many companies that we deal with, and we have some global breadth now when we're dealing with companies, and we come across the same problems. You know, they're all governed by minimum order quantities. In Microsoft's case, it was 250 units. Language, not a big difference in not huge differences in the U.S., where it's predominantly one, and in places two languages used. In Europe, quite a different matter with 27 different languages used. And again, when you move to Asia, there's more languages used again. But still, you know, we would recognize that from a supply chain perspective in Europe and Asia, it's around language. In the U.S., it's more, the application is more around marketing and speed to market. But within Microsoft's family of product, there was 250 units with the minimum order units, 27 different languages, and it was 14,600 SKUs. So when you get 14,600 multiply by 27, multiply 250 units, that's a lot of inventory. And a lot of inventory that had a lot of obsolescence. And in terms of dollar losses, they were very heavy. Generally, the supply chain, the packaging supply chain, said, look, this is the way we do things. There is minimum quantities because we've got to pay back our investment. We've got to pay back down our machines. So that's what you've got to live with. A lot of the approach from the bigger converters was, look, you've got to fit into the way we do things. Our approach was slightly different and said, look, we'll have a look in the market. We'll see what hardware is there. And then if we've got to work with the customer to understand their business and configure workflows around their business, well, then let's go off and do that. So, in effect, their existing system was costing them a lot of money. There was no real vision as to, you know, this way Microsoft, they would say, we want to do our business in 5 years' time. Yet there's no one from that industry, the printing industry, saying, listen, we can sit down and help you work through that and maybe collaborate and work together to get you to a speaker more effectively more just-in-time on-demand model. So in terms of what we did with them, we put in the fully automated packaging solution from Xerox. We created complete end-to-end workflows to make sure that it was the fastest and best supply chain model there was, and there currently is for Microsoft on their short-run packaging. And we re-engineered completely their supply chain around all their short-run requirements and took it away from being the problem child of the group to being the star of the group. And, you know, what we saw is through this workflow, we moved to a model that was more efficient and more smart. The minimum order quantity of 250 units, you know, really disappeared, whereas 50% of all the order is under 15 units. And that's quite a seismic change and shift in the supply chain. You know, the 50% of all the orders are under 15 units. And, you know, pretty much an impossible task in offset or lithographic, very easy task when you consider the workflows and the hardware with the Xerox solution in the marketplace. The 31-day lead time that they had is now we can have packaging, we can have cartons in 4 hours. As I said, the normal turnaround is about 48 hours. Through our repository system, we mirror their repository system with ours. So the version control with 27 languages under all the different SKUs, fully automated and under management through our software solution. And we started off life, and this is where, again, brand owners and printers can work very well with this technology, and they can grow the technology and the use of the technology together. We started off with just low-volume manufacturing processes for the launch of Windows 7. Now we work across the full range of Microsoft products in terms of Office, in terms of Windows, in terms of their games.
Simon, one of the questions, and I realize that this is primarily a folding carton opportunity, but what range of substrates are you using on the iGen right now?
Okay, so we use, in terms of the substrate use, we use, as I said, the sheet-fed substrate into the iGen 4.
Are there, in terms of heaviness of the stocks and those kinds of things, any perspective on that in terms of what you're using today?
I'll, at this point, I'll have to plead. We're operating in metric. You guys are in imperial, so I don't want to give anybody a bum steer on this. So it's something
metric
I think we should maybe come back to.
Okay, that's fine, Simon.
So in terms of the, and I want to maybe just look at, you know, when we're talking about supply chain, there's huge benefits in terms of speed to market, and there's huge activity around, you know, the multiple languages and multiple messages you can get onto the box. You know, and each piece of material coming off the machine is indeed unique in terms of individual boxes. But really, when I look at the marketing opportunities, this is where, you know, I think the U.S. market in particular needs to focus on with this technology, because this to me is probably the single best piece of differentiation that you can possibly have going into the marketplace against your competitors. And I mean, I guess just from a marketing perspective, if I can say this, and I think Barb, you did allude to it in your presentation, that the way money is spent on advertising is going to change over the next 5 to 10 years, and the way marketing money is spent. And, you know, it's all going to be about value for money. It's all going to be about, you know, at what point are we going to influence consumer the most? And, you know, it's a well-known fact, whilst you might influence consumers with TV advertising and newspaper advertising and so on, and the traditional mediums of advertising, at the point of purchase is where probably the decision is made. Or, indeed, the decision can be altered. In other words, you can infiltrate at that point of purchase, because generally 95% of the time people don't change their mind. But by the use of the pack on shelf at a particular point of purchase, that I believe is one of the biggest single pieces of this innovation can bring to a brand owner. So if we look at it just from the perspective, on the left you have a packet that sits there, oh, this is ladies' nylons that sits there all year round and looks the same. Through versioning and through, again, infiltrating on a seasonal basis, on an occasion, on a particular time and particular point in time of the year, that you can flash in a message on the top left-hand corner, right-hand corner of the box, that you're actually specifying a particular occasion, and you are going to infiltrate the supply chain. What I mean by that is you're going to just move a specific quantity for a specific period of time, and then you're back out again. And I would say that this is to be done in conjunction with retail promotions, in, you know, that you're using technology to drive a point of difference at the retail front end. We also see it where, again, we talked about QR codes a moment ago, and this is, again, a standard technology that's been used in Japan since the 70s and early 80s, where, you know, today we've 1 in 3 people in Japanese people interacting with a QR code on a daily basis, where, you know, let's just take a $5 packet of nylons that they can be purchased in the store with a QR code. Consumer scans the QR code. This gives the opportunity to maybe go online, get a limited edition 1 of 500 of a brand that's maybe exclusive. In this case, it's a packet of designer nylons that might sell for $22 at a time. So what's this doing from a brand owner's perspective? It's actually taking the relationship away from the department store or the supermarket that they have with the customer. It's actually giving them a one-to-one relationship. Now, so we're moving from the use of the pack back into driving one-to-one relationships between the brand owner and the consumer. And that's a very big prize, and that can be done through the package. It can be done through online messaging on the package. This pack is each one of these packs is unique to a particular customer. So if it's 1 of 500, that can be personalized to a person's name. And the thing about the automated digital packaging process is that, you know, once the form factor is the same, it can print many, many thousands of one, as opposed to, you know, any other thing else. So in terms of this particular side, it's direct relationship between the brand owner and the consumer. And that's got huge value.
Hey, Simon, one of the things I mentioned, and you know, we see more and more of this, is Procter & Gamble, and I think thought it was very interesting, is moving online to their e-store. So ultimately, I could take that QR code and I could embed Barb Pello's name and address. When you take a look at this, are you seeing that migration to online ordering? And ultimately, I mean, if I'm running out of laundry detergent, I could point and click and order new laundry detergent. Do you see that as a trend in the European market as well?
Yeah, I watched a video today of, and maybe not so much in Europe right now, but certainly it's trending the way you're talking about, but maybe beyond that again, where in Korea, what they're using in train stations is people can go on and, you know, what you have is basically on the train station walls is effectively your supermarket shelves, and they're going along with their smartphone, scanning the QR codes, and that's actually ordering the groceries for them, and their groceries are at home when they get back from a hard day's work or whatever the case may be. So in the morning, they're actually doing their shopping, but they're shopping by scanning a wall. That's a very interesting video I share it with you. But, you know, interestingly, that's where that technology is going. So, I mean, I think it's a fad, but I think it's a fad that's going to be with us for a while, you know, and I think it's going to be used. But it does indicate the way the market is moving. You know, the people are, you know, it's time poor. Technology is making it easier to do things like online shopping. And I think, you know, you'll find that devices like smartphones will get slightly bigger and maybe faster. Yeah. And that, you know, what we're seeing as being almost abnormal now will become the norm in the next 5 to 10 years. And particularly as younger people, obviously growing up with this newer technology, it will become, you know, shopping is going to the way we shop is going to change. There's no doubt about that.
Great. Thanks, Simon.
We're looking at, again, just, you know, when we look at and talk with brand owners, and it's only when we get in and examine, you know, pack. I mean, this particular pack, again, I'm just going to stay with hosiery and or nylon. This particular pack, in some cases, hosiery could have 6 to 8 labels on a box. So, I mean, you know, a cart might start off costing 5 cents. You know, but by the time labels are put on, and then, you know, the people who put on the labels have to be paid, and then, you know, there's massive amounts of inventory have to be stored. These are all post-lithographic costs that we study. So we actually, when we look at it with our brand owners, and we help you understand, you know, yes, the cart might cost 5 cents, but for every sticker you put on, it costs 2 cents. You know, so sometimes, you know, when we look beyond the printer and we look back, you know, exactly examine the true life cycle cost of a particular cart and a particular box, this is what we see. We see many, many stickers costing many, many dollars, and what digital print, effectively, every sticker to us is artwork. So artwork replaces the need for stickers. And again, that's a significant business case or business discussion to be had with the brand owner in order to make a business case. So again, just very briefly, we just go through some unique uses that we can see. Again, on the left is the standard duty-free packet of moisturizers and sun creams. You know, when we look at the car from a digital perspective, we flash it with a price. We insert a QR code in the top right hand corner. We make it exclusive to a particular airport or a particular store, whatever the case may be. So, in effect, it's a nice, clever way to uniquely pack up something for a season or for an occasion. And again, it's in and out of a market very quickly, but what it does, the competitors are left, you know, with their standard pack sitting there looking very, very sad when one you can make look very, very different as often as you want is the star of the show. So again, we're seeing that quite often. This is the standard CD box, and again, this goes back to the point I made earlier. You know, you can buy the CD carton for maybe 3 or 4 cents, but the sticker that you see on it is also going to cost 2 or 3 cents. So, I mean, again, it's taking stickers to other artwork, so it's taking... bringing efficiencies into the supply chain. What we're seeing more and more of, again, and you know, competitive environments that they are, on the left is a standard box of their high-end omega-3 bone replacement type non-pharma medicines. So, again, it's where a price is flashed. It's exclusive to a particular chain of stores. And, again, that's what both brand owners want and stores want. They want an offer that's, hey, I don't want the same offer that's with everybody else. I want something that's exclusive to me. And again, you're seeing that type of dynamic. And this, again, you don't have to change your whole supply chain. You're just changing a small part of it to enable this type of marketing activity to happen. Again, we're seeing things that are sleeves as apart from full packs. So this is where there's convenience means that, you know, you can just put a sleeve, and we see, again, the use of sleeves as being a particular important part of our business, where more and more brand owners are coming to us and say, look, rather than just have the full box, I mean, I'll just put a sleeve over, and that sleeve can have the offer. So when we see that, and maybe it's 3 for 2, we also see it, and this is, again, going back to my earlier point, you know, so this is Asda. Asda is a supermarket that is owned by Walmart. So what Asda will do, they'll have, you know, they'll spend millions and millions and millions of dollars advertising a particular promotion. So this would be take the price challenge, you know, 10% back if you find your product cheaper anywhere else, whatever the case may be. So they guarantee it to be cheaper. So normally what they do, they're out on TV, they're out on newspaper, they're out on radio, but there's never anything on the pack. So again, it's allowing to take the message directly to the consumer. So by association, they're triggering the memory at the point of purchase. So again, it's taking the strategic marketing, the strategic activity that's happening, and actually using it tactically on the shelf. So my advice, when we talk to brand owners all the time, we say, listen, you've got to move more of your spend to this type of activity and influence the customer spend at the point of purchase. Again, we just look at some of these where, you know, you're just inserting different messages and they're getting in and out of the market, as I said, very, very quickly. So, Barb, at this point, is there any questions that maybe before we go into the second part of our presentation?
I was just gonna scoot into a couple of these. The first one is, when you look at the color repeatability, what's the quality of the repeatability on the overall color?
We have, let me just say from the perspective of what it can do. I mean, this is a four-color process, but what it can do is outstanding from a repeatability perspective. We've never had a decommit. We've never had any issue. You know, obviously, we spend a lot of time just getting the color right, so we've got good color management systems. The iGEM, we're very happy with the repeatability. You know, we work hard at it, but at the end of the day, we've had zero complaints. You know, and within, you know, and we tend to talk about what this process and what this machine can do as opposed to what it can't do. So we know it ain't got six color. We know we can't do everything, but you know what? We can do pretty much, we've been able to do pretty much everything that's been sent to us. But we know there's certain colors we just can't get. So then we maybe might look at a base stock and overprint option where we're printing the color out of the process and then do, you know, overprint. But generally speaking, that might account for less than 2% of our work. So, you know, generally we and what we're doing, we're working with brand owners now to maybe, you know, if a new product is coming on, can we start designing it with digital in mind? So, you know, that in the future you are going to be using, you know, a twin process for LiPo and digital. So it's easier to, you know, design for digital. And, you know, that's going down reasonably well.
Okay. Now, somebody had asked the question about substrates earlier, and while we were talking, I had somebody text me the answer. But the range on substrates for the iGen is from 50 to 350 GSM, which says that that'd be equivalent of an 18-point folding board. The system also deals with Teslin, vellum, offset, and coated and uncoated stocks. So just kind of a quick response relative to that. One other question I got, and then I've got one more for you, Simon, before I turn it back to you. But somebody said, what's the link between a QR code, which could be printed on an offset press? The big difference in a QR code is when I start dealing with packaging, which could be very personalized, I have the ability within that QR code to encode variable data. And what that means is, let's assume that I've ordered from a personal shopping site, and let's assume it's Procter & Gamble. I would have the ability to embed my name and address information in the label or the package that was shipped to me. When I started to run out of a specific item, I could point and click on the label, and it would contain within that QR code the ship-to information, so all I had to do is say I'm running low and I need to order these 20 products. And I could do it all from my kitchen with my personal cell phone. And so it's changing and transforming that shopping experience. And quite honestly, it says, hey, what I'm doing is I'm combining. And if you look at what Procter & Gamble's done, they've said, I have a flat shipping fee, $5, and order as much as you want off the website for that $5. Well, at the price of gas today, you may find it much more cost-effective not to jump in your car and to order your toothpaste, whatever it winds up being, from a website. So that's the concept behind that. And, Simon, I have one more quick question for you because you've dealt with this quite a bit, and then I'll let you carry on. But are there any – what are the size limits that you're dealing with relative to formats on the iGen? Page sizes, width, depth of the actual page format. Do you know if you don't, that's all right. We'll get back to them.
Sorry, Barb. No, I lost you. Sorry.
I said, what is the actual page, the sheet size that you're running through the iGen?
Well, that's varied. There's just a new sheet size is just about to be launched with the Xerox, so it goes up to 600 mils.
Okay, and I just got that. It's 14.33 by 22.5 inches at the high end and 7 by 7 at the low end, right? And I've translated it into inches for everybody in the U.S.
I'm nervous about giving out. Again, we're metric here.
That's all right. Okay, Simon, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, so, I mean, if we just want to look very briefly at a go-to-market strategy for brand owners, and this is just maybe to help brand owners and printers maybe understand, or packaging converters understand how this can be brought to market. So the way we look at this, the brand owner engagement, you know, it needs to happen at a number of different levels within the brand owner. So, you know, it's as much a marketing consideration as it is a packaging supply chain consideration. And most importantly, I guess, it's a financial consideration because, you know, you've got a couple of financial considerations in here, and one of the key things for us is, you know, obsolescence. I mean, can it take a lot of cost out of my business? And also from a revenue-increasing perspective, we just saw some clever marketing applications. I mean, can we grow our sales? And these are the two key questions that need to be asked when we're looking at a brand owner's business. So, you know, it's not about hands in our pockets going in selling on price because, you know, this isn't the point of differentiation for this type of technology. The point of differentiation for this technology is a sleeker supply chain that gives you far better opportunities to grow through product differentiation. And, you know, when you're competing with your competing brands, you want to be first, you want to be best, and you want to be fast. So when we look at this, we say, okay, there's a number of stages which we need to get through. And the first stage here we want to build some sort of base case for a brand owner. And this is where we're looking at, okay, but look, can we see if there's obsolescence? Can we look at your profile, your business, and see what's suitable in terms of size, substrate type, in terms of order frequency? And let's see, you know, do you have obsolescence? And what level of business is suitable for digital? But this is really, you know, at the first broad brush stroke, you know, do you have obsolescence problem? What's the value? If we move to digital, can we all but eliminate the obsolescence? At the same time, in this subset of work, we're also looking at, okay, well, can we build strategic capability through marketing? Can we actually, you know, look at packaging as a unique point of differentiation that the competitors don't have? And we're building up a base case in terms of, you know, and this is a discussion stage where we're really saying, you know, yeah, but in a brief study that's all done through the cloud, it's all, you know, this is it's not difficult to conduct one of these studies. It's basically a questionnaire. You know, can we build the base case? Once the base case has been built, we're then looking, can we build a business case? And the business case involves, I spoke to you about stickers and I spoke to you about post-lithographic costs. At this particular point in time, what we want to do is, you know, look at this from a business perspective, an ROI perspective. Look at it if, you know, if we're going to make an investment, Mr. Brand Owner or Ms. Brand Owner, you know, will you make the investment with it? In other words, will you underpin the investment? So, you know, this is where packaging converters and printers work with brand owners, and this is certainly how we approach our business. And, you know, it's everybody's on board. This is not just about, you know, getting some small bits of short run or bespoke packaging and we're going to invest in a big line to do it. This is about understanding, can we help you with your business from the supply chain and marketing perspective, and can we build capability for you by, you know, investing in one of these machines, investing in one of these processes. So really, again, this is all cloud-based activity whereby analysis, we can use the business intelligence tools to analyze as to whether or not there's a business case to be had and understand whether there's a return on investment from the brand owner's perspective. We also then look from a printer's perspective because, again, we don't want this to be a, you know, one-way driven. I mean, at the moment, this needs to be a two-case made, that there's a case made for the brand owner and there's a case made for the printer that supports the investment. So, again, we look at it from that perspective to understand whether there's a base case or printer's case to invest in the equipment and the process. And then, really, when it comes to the decision that, you know, we're fortunate that when we go talk to our brand owners and we get into this process, what we want coming out of this process is, you know, we're going to give you, you know, if there's 2 million cartons or 5 million cartons per annum, and it's going to run for 3 years or 2 years, whatever, let's sign that contract and let's commit to each other. And this is really where this combined business decision comes in. So, you know, it's not a process where build it and they will come. I think it's more to do with a process where, you know, the brand owner works very closely with the printer or the packaging converter to understand the business requirements now and into the future being the next 5 years, and to come up with some sort of combined plan as to how to execute that strategy going forward by working very closely together.
Well, Simon, thank you. That was incredibly insightful. And if you've got a few more questions, I'll check the Q&A tabs in a second. I'm going to just take a minute to wrap up with a couple of recommendations and conclusions for everybody. I think what we're seeing, and packaging is no exception, the digital age continues to reshape our world. You know, we've seen technical capability through hardware such as computers, servers, mobile phones, and tablets that's enabled the connectivity of billions of people worldwide. And what we're seeing is that digital media, especially in the world of packaging, has enabled new ways to engage and energize shoppers and consumers with brands. Digital package printing is, by definition, I think, a disruptive innovation today. Digital technologies have steadily evolved during the past decade. And what I think we're going to see is that as we look forward to Drupa 2012, we're likely to see the next change in things like formats and speed, and printing technologies are going to continue to grow in capability, as well as the intersection of what I categorize as what's needed and what's possible. And so I think what we're going to see is we're going to see more materials, improved manufacturing capabilities, workflow. We're going to see the integration of information, new business models, and sales and marketing. I also think, and I think Simon is a case in point, is that we're going to see emerging markets and emerging competitors. Well, packaging was historically the realm of label and packaging converters. We're going to see companies like Simon's come into the market to address unique needs of customers. I also think we're going to see online services providers where I can do, in essence, not just web to print, but basically packaging to print and packaging on demand. And finally, I think what I'd like to leave you with is a few recommendations. And that would be, first of all, that I think we all need to look at the packaging market, and we need to sit down and say it's time to embrace digital print technology. I think that we all need to look at the world much like Simon has looked at it and how he's worked with Microsoft to re-engineer a work process. We're going to need to look at packaging as a point of engagement with customers. We're going to need to do what Simon did, which is invest in sales and marketing and education of that brand owner. And last but not least, I think we all need to prepare to engage in a world that's interactive. And we need to understand that that brand owner is going to call on that package to do a lot more than it ever has done before, and that's to make it engaging and interactive. And with that, what I'm going to do is thank each and every one of you, as well as Xerox, for sponsoring the webinar. We're at the top of the hour. I'd like to thank all of you, and especially Simon, for sharing his story. If we didn't get to your questions, what we will do is we'll respond to them electronically. And again, thanks, everybody, for your time and attention. We really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the day.